Morning, Matthews.
Sitting there on his stone bench, unshaven, reeking of absinthe, surrounded by a sea of cigarette butts. Matthews.
How are you? Laura? Mary?
Matthews. Old before his time.
Fill her up, will you? I'll give the windscreen a wipe.
Once my most capable man. I never met a detective like him in all my time as chief inspector. And now look at him. Unshaven, drunken, helpless. 9 years ago it all began. Matthews had got a posting, a promotion. Off to reorganize the police forces in Jordan. It was a good posting because I was due to retire. And by rights, Matthews should have been my successor. But there were problems with that. Matthews was a loner. Didn't smoke, didn't drink. He lived alone in a hotel, always dressed immaculately. He had a nickname in the force. Matt the Automat. Emotionless, humorless, passionless, tireless, stubborn. Stubborn. And not popular at all. I think I was the only person who liked him. I liked his mind, razor sharp. He was the closest thing we had to a genius. But no one would have welcomed him as the new chief inspector, so the Jordan posting was a godsend.
Here you are. Keep the change. Matthews, next time.
I'll wait. He'll come.
The Pledge, adapted by Peter Thompson from The Promise, a novel by Friedrich Dürrenmatt.
And Matthews was leaving for Jordan in 3 days. He was clearing his desk at the station when the call came in.
Where shall I put this one?
Over there.
What do you want all these books for, anyway?
Matthews. What? Who? Horton, yes. Yes, what do you want? Yes, all right. I'll deal with it. Stay where you are, you understand? I'll be there soon. Right. Matthews. Is it raining there, too? There's a man at the Stag. A peddler. Horton, his name is. Keep an eye on until I get there. Discreetly.
What's that?
It's raining in Margendorf, too. Get Halsey, Burkhart, the examining magistrate, and bring me the file on Horton.
Murder?
Damn the rain.
Discretion was not in Police Constable Rice's vocabulary, and he'd taken a seat directly opposite Horton. The peasants in the Stag were silent, wild with curiosity.
You want coffee?
No. Nothing. I'm here on duty.
You?
No.
So, what's he done then?
Mind your own bloody business.
That's Matthews. Come on, you.
Get in beside the driver. Horton, this is Mr. Burkhart, the examining magistrate.
All right, Horton, show us what you found.
Off to the woods they drove, and as they passed the village square by the fountain, Matthews saw a boy and a girl, both 5 or 6 years old. The little girl stood with a doll in her arms. The boy was holding a small whip.
Here.
A little blonde girl, lying naked and sliced among the dead leaves.
Halsey, a police officer never looks away. Come here.
No.
Difficult to find tracks after this rain.
Who could do something like this?
Burkhart, do you have to smoke?
Then Matthews saw the two children there. The girl with her doll, the boy still with his whip.
Take those children away. Now let's get a search going. Oh, God. The villagers are descending. Put a cordon up. Some of you stand guard.
I just happened to come by.
Right.
I've come in by.
Did you know the girl?
No, sir.
You seen her around the village?
I think so, sir.
Halsey, for God's sake, pull yourself together. Finished taking pictures yet?
Just one more from above. Sir?
Any tracks?
None. It's all mud.
Button's examined. Fingerprints?
Hopeless after this cloudburst. Sir, there's a gentleman over there who wants to speak to you.
We'll bring him over.
Sir.
Then he picked up the bread bits scattered around and replaced them in the child's basket.
Pretzels.
My God. My God.
May I ask your name?
I'm the head teacher, Mr. Gingell.
Mr. Gingell, do you know this girl?
Well, of course I do. It's Lily. It's Lily DeBell.
Where do the parents live?
Moosebear.
Is that far from the village?
15-minute walk.
Mm-hmm.
How did it happen?
A sex crime. So, did the child go to your school?
Well, she was in Mrs. Green's class. Class 3.
Have the DeBells any other children?
It was the only one.
Someone's got to tell the parents. Mr. Gingell, what about you?
Please, now, please don't think me cowardly, but I can't.
What about the local priest?
He's in the city at present.
I see. All right, you may go, Mr. Gingell. Halsey?
Please, no, Inspector.
Matthews glanced at the body once more, then at the torn little red skirt lying in the bushes, soaked through with blood and rain. He picked up the basket of pretzels.
I see. Then I will go. I'll go.
Boy and girl again. Their faces flushed. They must have taken a shortcut.
Go away! Shoo! What do you want? Inspector Matthews, Zurich Police. Mr. DeBell?
Yes? What do you want?
In the doorway of the house appeared a woman. She was also wearing a red skirt. Then the man saw the basket in Matthew's hand.
Something happened to Lily.
Did you send Lily somewhere?
To her grandmother's, in Fairon.
Did Lily go that way often?
Every Wednesday and Saturday afternoon. Why do you want to know? Why are you bringing the basket back?
Lily has been found dead in the woods near Margendorf.
Dobell stood quite still. The woman, too, stood without stirring in the doorway in her red skirt. Matthews stared at the father's white face, spellbound by the sweat that poured down. Streams of sweat.
Lily has been murdered.
It isn't possible. There can't be such devils.
There are such devils, Mr. DeBell.
I want to see my child.
I wouldn't do that, Mr. DeBell. It would be better not to look at her right now.
Why is it better?
We could hardly look ourselves.
Tomorrow evening, you can see your Lily. Then there will be nothing. She looks as if she's fallen asleep. Believe me.
Where is the murderer?
I intend to find out, Mrs. DeBell.
Do you promise that you will?
I promise, Mrs. DeBell.
By your soul's salvation?
By my soul's salvation.
Then go now. You've sworn by your salvation.
I am sorry.
Before him lay Margendorf with the woods beyond. Above, the sky, now cloudless. By the side of the road, the two children. And then... Whose cry was it? Was it the man or the woman who wept so?
The local councillor.
Who the hell are you?
Matthews, in charge of this investigation. The mob out there are on the verge of a riot.
What do you want me to do about it?
We've got to get back to Zurich. That crowd is blocking us. We've got an ambulance out there with a girl's body in it.
Lily was a good child. We were fond of her.
Look, none of our vehicles can move. What are you going to do about it?
What can I bloody do? They're taking the law into their own hands. They think the police are useless, but they've got to see to justice themselves.
The peddler is innocent.
Then why the hell have you arrested him?
We haven't arrested him. We need him as a witness.
Ah, you're only saying that.
As local councillor, your first duty is to see to it that we are allowed to depart freely. Well?
The peddler's going to swing for this.
Before that happens, there'll be a fight.
You'd fight for a pervert. A bloody child molester.
Whether he's guilty or not, the law must be respected. So what are you going to do?
More wine. I want some more bloody wine.
Matthews. Hmm? Look, Councillor, the people of Margendorf seem keen on a lynching. We have no choice but to send for reinforcements.
No good trying to communicate with him, Burkhard. Look, let's try talking to them first.
Look, it's dangerous.
Come on. Councillor, you too.
I request you to listen to his worship, Mr. Burkhardt.
Fellow citizens, people of Margendorf, we are all shocked by this terrible crime. Lily DeBell has been murdered. We do not know who has committed this crime.
We do!
Hand him over! Yeah.
Quick, Matthews, telephone for reinforcements.
Orton did it! I saw him! There was no one else in the dial!
People, I am Inspector Matthews. We are prepared to surrender the peddler to you.
Have you gone out of your mind?
From time immemorial in our country, criminals have been convicted by courts if they were guilty and set free if they were not guilty. Now you yourselves have decided to be the court. Whether you have the right to do so, we won't go into here. What is important is that you have taken the right. But there is something that I must ask of you, just as I would of any court in the land. Justice. Yes. Justice. For it's clear that we can only surrender the peddler to you if we are convinced that you want justice.
That's what we want.
Your court all we want. Has to meet one condition if it is to be a just court. And that condition is injustice must be avoided. Do you agree to meet this condition?
Agree.
Yeah, agree.
So, you'll have to look into the question of whether the charge of murder against Horton is a just or an unjust charge. What made you suspicious?
He's a jailbird.
He's done time.
Yes, that adds to the suspicion that he might be this killer. But it isn't proof, is it?
I saw him in the dale.
Come up here. Yeah, you.
Go on, Harry. Don't be a coward.
Go on.
Go on.
Well, what do you want me, then?
Your name?
Harold Bite.
Mr. Bates. You say you saw Horton the peddler in the dale. Was he alone there?
Yeah, alone.
And what were you doing, Mr. Bates?
Oh, plenty of potatoes with me wife and kids.
And you'd been at it since when?
Since about 10 o'clock. Huh? I had dinner with me wife and kids out there in the field.
And you saw no one but the peddler?
No one!
I can swear to that.
Well, that's stupid. I went past your potato field at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, I cycled past around 2 as well.
So did I, between 1 and 2.
We've established that the peddler was not alone in the dale. But let's continue with our investigation. Now, a road to the city runs parallel to the woods. Yes? Now, did anybody pass along this road?
Fred Gorb.
When?
About 2.
Now, from this road, there is a path that leads through the woods to the scene of the crime. Did you notice anybody, Mr. Gorb?
No.
Or did you by any chance see a parked car?
Well, I think so.
Do you know that for sure?
Well,
could it have been a red Mercedes convertible?
Could have been, yes.
Or a grey Volkswagen?
Yes, possible.
Mm-hmm. Your answers are pretty vague.
I was half asleep, you see.
I see. Then I will take this opportunity to remind you that nobody is supposed to sleep whilst driving on a public road.
The horses keep their eyes open.
Thank you, Mr. Gorb. Now, after what you've heard, do you think the peddler has been found guilty? That's the question you've got to ask yourself. And remember, a point in his favour, it was the peddler himself who called the police. Now, I don't know how you intend to proceed as judges, but I'll tell you how we, the police, would like to proceed. Every suspect, no matter what his position, will be investigated with the greatest care. All imaginable clues will be followed up. Not only this, but we call on the help of police from other countries if it proved necessary. Now, as you can see, your court hasn't many ways of getting at the truth, but we, on the other hand, have a vast apparatus at our disposal. So decide what you want to be done.
Will you really surrender the peddler?
I said I would, if you insist on our handing him over.
Take him with you.
My God, Matthews, you took a risk there. What if you'd been obliged to keep your word?
I got it all worked out.
Well, I hope you never give a promise you have to keep.
Mm-hmm.
Want a lift?
No, thanks. I'll go with Horton.
I'm innocent.
Of course.
Nobody believes me. The police don't either.
Just your imagination.
You don't believe me either, Inspector.
I do believe you, Horton. I know you had nothing to do with it. We have to take you to see the chief, that's all. You're our most important witness.
Yeah. You don't believe me.
That's nonsense.
I know.
That evening, I came back from Bern on the 7:30 express and heard from Matthews what had happened. This was the third case of its kind. 2 years ago, there'd been the razor killing of a girl in the Schwyz canton, and 5 years ago, a girl in the canton of St. Gall. In both cases, no trace of a criminal had been found. I sent for the peddler. His story was simple. He'd had a good lunch in a nearby town, laid down near the edge of the woods, fell asleep, woke up, and came across the girl on his way through the woods to the local railway station. I had him taken away, but not released. It's got the ring of truth about it, his story.
Yes.
It's a clever place to kill someone. The murderer could have come from just about anywhere. Margendorf, Zurich, any one of the villages around there. Further afield.
Mm.
And as to how he got there and where he went to and... Oh, Matthews, I'm sorry you've been dragged into all this. Who's going to take over when you're gone?
May I suggest Halsey?
Halsey? Well, he's capable, he's good, yes, but he's so inexperienced.
He's been working under me for 3 years now. He's learned the ropes. I can't imagine a better successor. And he'll handle it just as I would.
All right. I'll trust your judgment.
Anyway, I'll still be around tomorrow.
Get Halsey in here, would you? Yes?
The photographs of the DeBell girl, sir.
Oh, right, thank you. God. Who could do something like this? Oh, my God. And you look at these photos and you want to chuck the whole thing in. Yes. Ah, Halsey.
Chief?
I'd like you to take over the DeBell case.
What?
You didn't hear me.
I did. Thank you.
Oh, thank Matthews. So, what's the mood among the men?
Well, they're convinced we've already got our murderer.
The peddler.
He's already been convicted of sexual assault.
With a 15-year-old, that's a bit different.
I think we should cross-examine him.
No, that can wait.
I know he's creepy and I don't trust him, but that's purely a subjective response, not hard evidence. So, we need all our men on this, Halsey. Set up headquarters at the Stag in Margendorf, start questioning the locals. We need to call the garages, see if they've seen any cars with traces of blood in them. The laundries likewise. Let's round up the known sex offenders and let's come up with a murder weapon. We can go through the wood with metal detectors, bloodhounds, the works.
Right, I'll get going right away. And Matthews, thanks.
Not at all.
I think I'll pay a visit out there as well.
To Margendorf?
Yeah, come with me. I thought I'd visit the school. See if any of the children know anything.
All right.
Good.
Yes.
I'm sorry to disturb you. I'm Chief Inspector Tanner. This is Inspector Matthews.
What is it you want?
Good morning, children.
Good morning, sir.
We're practicing the hymn for Lily's funeral.
What kind of child was Lily?
We were all very fond of her. She was an extremely imaginative child.
I would like to ask the children some questions, if you don't mind.
If you like.
Now, children, you've no doubt heard what happened to Lily DeBell. I'm from the police. I am the commissioner, and it's my job to find out who killed Lily. The man we're looking for is ill. But the thing is, you wouldn't know he was ill by looking at him because he's ill on the inside. Now, did Lily ever tell any of you that a strange man spoke to her? Was there anything about Lily that struck you as odd lately? Well, did Lily have anything new lately? Anything she didn't own in the past? Well, who was Lily's best friend?
I was.
And what's your name?
Hannah Friedman.
So, you were Lily's friend, Hannah.
We sat together.
And did you notice anything out of the ordinary?
No.
Lily didn't meet anyone?
Yes, she did.
Who?
Not a person.
What do you mean by that, Hannah?
She met a giant.
A giant?
Yes.
You mean she met a big, tall man?
No, my father is a big, tall man, but he's not a giant.
Well, how big was he?
Like a mountain and all black.
And did this giant give Lily anything?
Yes.
What did he give her?
Little hedgehogs.
Hedgehogs?
The whole giant was full of little hedgehogs.
Now, that's silly, Hannah.
It was a hedgehog giant.
I see. Well, thank you, Hannah. You're right, Mrs. Green. Lily seems to have had a vivid imagination.
She was a poetic child. Now, we really ought to get on with our practice. It's for the funeral. Tomorrow. It'll need a deal more practice.
Yes, of course. Thank you.
Ready now, children.
And...
dropped off at your hotel?
Thank you.
Not a single lead.
I don't think the murderer's a Margendorfer. This was a job by the same man who killed the girls in St. Gall and Schwyz. More likely, the murderer's operating out of Zurich.
Wasn't too keen on Halsey leaving the Stag at noon today. Said he'd be better off back at the station talking to Horton. Still... not my job to interfere.
It's probable the man's got a car. Perhaps a commercial traveller. Gorb, the farmer, said he saw a car parked in the woods.
Well, I questioned Gorb myself today. Said he was too sound asleep to notice anything.
I'm sorry to have to leave you in the middle of all this, but...
Jordan waits.
Sunshine will do you good. When are you flying?
3 in the afternoon. Stop off at Athens.
Oh, my God, I envy you. I'd much rather be chief among the Arabs than here in Zurich. Now, there's something about this case I don't know.
It's the weather.
No, it's like it's fated in some way. I'm sure you're right. Well, do you think you'll come back to Zurich?
Well, I have a sister in Denmark, a widow. I thought perhaps...
Want some supper?
No, I better get back. Thanks.
Halsey, what are you doing here at this time of night?
He still won't confess.
Who? Who won't confess?
Horton.
You're giving him the third degree?
All afternoon. And we'll keep it up all night if we have to. True love's working on him now. Just came out for a breath of air.
I think I want to have a look at this.
We're in Matthew's office.
I didn't do it, officer.
I didn't say you did. I only said you could have done it. Now, whether I'm right or not is what we're trying to find out, isn't it? So, let's start again at the beginning. You say you settled yourself comfortably on the edge of the woods.
Yes, sir.
And slept.
That's right, sir.
Why? Are you sure you weren't waiting for the girl?
Oh, no idea. She was coming. Honestly, you've got to believe me.
I believe you. But I've got to check your story. You know that, Horton. Now, you say that after you had your nap, you went into the woods in order to return to Zurich.
There was a storm brewing, so I wanted to take the shortcut.
And that's how you came across the body.
That's right, officer.
We've taken your clothes away, Horton, and given you these clothes. Do you know why?
No.
To make a benzodiazepine test. Now, do you know what a benzodiazepine test is?
No, officer.
It's a chemical test for traces of blood. We discovered traces of blood on your shirt, Horton. It's the girl's blood.
Because I fell over the body, officer. It was awful.
And, of course, the only reason you didn't mention that was that you were scared.
Yes, officer.
And now we are supposed to believe that you are telling the truth?
Didn't do it, officer. Please believe me. Send for Inspector Matthews. He knows I'm telling the truth. He knows.
Inspector Matthews no longer has anything to do with this case. He's flying off to Jordan tomorrow.
Didn't know that.
I'll take over, shall I? Close this window. Still gets nippy this time of year.
Absolutely no reason for you to be upset, Horton. We aren't out to get you. We just want the truth. That's why we're appealing to you. You're our most important witness. We need your help.
Yes, Inspector.
You smoke, Horton?
Yes.
Give him one, true love. Mind if I smoke my pipe? Filthy habit. Must give it up. Oh, is the light bothering you?
It's shining right in my eyes.
Better?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, tell me, Horton, what sort of things do you sell? Dishcloths?
Yes, dishcloths too.
What else?
Shoelaces, Inspector, toothbrushes, toothpaste, soap, shaving cream.
Is that all, Horton?
I think so, Inspector.
Good. But I think you've forgotten a few things. Go on. We've had a good look in your basket. Well?
Kitchen knives, Inspector.
Go on, Horton. What else besides kitchen knives?
Razors.
Why did you put that last? The girl was killed with a razor. There's no sense pretending anymore. I know you committed the murder, but I also know you are just as shocked by the act as I am, as we all are. It just came over you. Suddenly you were like an animal. You attacked and killed the girl without wanting to and without being able to stop yourself. Something was more powerful than you. And when you came to, you were horrified. Off you rushed to Margendorf to give yourself up, but at the last minute you lost your nerve. Your nerve to confess. I am your friend, Horton. We're giving you this chance. Why not take it?
I'm tired.
So are we all.
Sergeant Truelove, get us some coffee and some beer, would you? And for our guest, too.
Sir.
We're fair here.
I'm innocent, Inspector. I'm innocent.
Halsey? Yes? Right. Yes, good. Tell me, Horton, what exactly did you eat for lunch yesterday?
Sausage, potatoes, ham.
Good. And what else?
Cheese.
Peddlers eat well these days. And was that all you ate?
Yes.
I would think that over carefully.
Oh, chocolate.
Well, so there was something else. And where did you eat the chocolate?
By the edge of the woods.
I have just received the report from the coroner's office. They finished the autopsy on the girl. You know what they found in her stomach? Chocolate.
Next morning, it was a Saturday. Halsey phoned me at 7 o'clock. Horton had confessed. I arrived at the office at 8.
A detailed confession?
He'll give you that later. The main thing is that he confessed to the murder.
I hope you kept your hands clean. How long was the interrogation?
20 hours. Look, Chief, no shady methods were used.
I went into my own office and ordered the peddler to be shown in. He could hardly stand on his feet. He had to be supported by the policeman who brought him.
Sit down, Horton.
Oh.
I hear you've confessed to the murder of Lily DeBell.
Yeah, I killed the girl. Let me alone now.
Go and get some sleep, Horton. We'll talk about this later on. Take him.
Come on.
Oh, Matthews, come in.
Matthews.
Come
on,
Matthews. So, what do you say?
Wasn't the man interrogated for more than 20 hours?
Halsey's only been following in your illustrious footsteps. Seems to have handled his first independent case very well, wouldn't you say?
I sent out for coffee and croissant. The two of us were both depressed. And the hot coffee didn't improve our mood.
I have the feeling he'll retract his confession.
Possibly. Then we'll just have to work him over again.
You think he's guilty?
Well, don't you?
I... Yes, I suppose I do.
Chief, bad news. Orton's managed to hang himself.
My God.
The cell was at the end of a long corridor. Inside, two men were already busy with the peddler. He lay on the floor. They had ripped open his shirt, but his chest didn't stir. His braces were still dangling from the window bars.
It's no use, sir. The man's dead.
Wearily, we made our way back to my office down the endless corridors.
So, that ends the case of Lily DeBell. I hope you have a pleasant flight to Jordan, Matthews.
On the way to the airport that afternoon, Matthews asked Fuller, who was driving him, to take a little diversion through Margendorf. They reached the village square just as the funeral procession was approaching. A long line of silent people. Matthews got out of the car and stood among the children opposite the church. The coffin had been placed in a cart drawn by two horses and was heaped with white roses. Behind the coffin came the children of the village, two by two, each pair carrying a wreath. A sea of flowers, a sea of children. And then came Lily DeBell's parents. Two figures in black. The mother stopped in front of Matthews, stared hard at him, her eyes empty.
You have kept your promise. Thank you.
She walked on, beside a husband who had suddenly grown old. Matthews waited till the long procession had passed into the church.
To the airport. Let's go.
Matthews was walking towards the plane, his raincoat over his arm, when he turned and saw children on the airport terrace. Hundreds of them, whole classes of them in their bright spring clothes, waving little banners and handkerchiefs and shouting with excitement each time a plane touched down or took off. He was at the top of the steps about to board the plane when he turned round and looked again at the sea of children.
Your ticket, sir.
Sorry?
Your ticket.
Sorry, I'm not taking this flight.
And Matthews walked down the steps, back towards the terminal, under the terrace with its masses of children, and onto the exit. The next morning, Sunday morning, he came to visit me.
Sit down, Mr. Matthews.
Thank you.
The federal government concluded a treaty with the Kingdom of Jordan. You, Captain Matthews, likewise signed a contract with Jordan. Your failure to depart violated those agreements. And speaking as one man of law to another, do I need to make myself any plainer?
Nope.
I must therefore ask you to leave for Jordan just as soon as you possibly can.
I'm not going.
Why?
Lily DeBell's murderer hasn't been found yet.
You don't think it was the peddler?
No, I don't.
But we have his confession.
He must have lost his nerve. The long third degree, despair, the feeling of being abandoned. I abandoned him. I'm partly to blame. Horton was depending on me and I didn't help him. I wanted to be off to Jordan. I want the case again, please,
Chief.
I
can't do that. Anyway, you're not with us anymore, Mr. Matthews.
I'm dismissed.
Oh, you resigned from the police force to take a posting in Jordan. If you've broken your contract, that's your affair. And if we were to employ you again, it would mean that we condoned your action. Yeah, you'll understand that that would be impossible.
I see.
That's it. There's nothing to be done.
I see. When I passed through Margendorf on my way to the airport, there were lots of children there.
What do you mean?
In the funeral procession.
Well?
And in the airport, there were crowds of them, too. Whole classes from the schools.
Yes, well?
Assuming that I'm right. Assuming that her murderer is still around, wouldn't the other children be in danger?
Certainly.
Then it is our duty as police to protect the children and prevent another crime.
So that's why you didn't take your plane.
That's why.
Look, Matthews, you've just got to accept that there will always be danger for children. And let's say you're right. Then all we can hope for is that the next time the killer leaves some clues. Now, that sounds terrible, I know, but it's realistic. And anyway, it's overwhelmingly likely that Horton's our killer. I mean, you look at the facts, Matthews. He'd already been convicted of one assault. He was carrying razors and chocolate with him. He had blood on his clothing. He confessed. And anyway, look. Lily DeBell's murder is not the only crime we've got to deal with. We've got most of our men out at this very moment to deal with a series of burglaries. We can't afford the luxury of re-examining a closed case. Look, Matthews. Matthew's children will always be at risk. There are over 200 sex crimes involving children every year. Just in this city. We can only do what we can do. There's got to be a limit somewhere. I can understand your personal situation. It's become rather difficult, but I suggest that you get on the next plane for Jordan.
Thank you, Commissioner. For the present, I shall look into the case of Lily Dobell privately.
I would let this matter rest.
I have no such intention.
Then may I request you not to trouble us with the affair?
If you wish.
From that moment, Matthews was like a ghost resurrected from the dead. When he ran into Fuller, the man avoided his eyes. He wanted to get to Margendorf, but he had no car to take him. On the tram, he saw Truelove, who stared, but asked no questions. In Margendorf, the Sunday bells had stopped ringing. Farmers in their Sunday best were drifting into the Stag in a field. Boys were playing football. Somewhere people were singing. It all seemed as if nothing had happened. And in the village square, some children were playing hide-and-seek.
What? Mister, mister.
What do you want?
Stand in front of me so they don't find me.
Here?
Don't turn round.
Hannah.
You mustn't talk so loud or else I'll hear you.
Hannah, I don't believe that about the giant.
What don't you believe?
That Lily Dobell met a giant as big as a mountain.
But there are such giants.
Have you ever seen one?
No, but Lily did. Quiet, don't move.
18, 19, 20.
Coming when you're not, coming to get you. Let's get you. He didn't see me.
Lily told you a fairy tale.
No, every week the giant waited for Lily and gave her hedgehogs.
Where was that?
In Robindale, and she made a picture of him. So there must be one, the little hedgehogs too.
She made a picture of the giant?
It's up in the classroom. Move out of my way.
See you. Coming to get you. Home, home. You didn't get home. I caught you first.
No, I got home before you caught
me. I heard from the Margendorf counsellor the next day that Matthews had broken into the school during the night and had stolen a drawing by the murdered girl. The counsellor was incensed. Then Halsey stormed into my room and told me he'd had an argument with Matthews in a restaurant the night before. Matthews had just polished off a bottle of wine and a couple of cognacs and then reeled over to Halsey's table and accused him of causing a miscarriage of justice or words to that effect. Halsey was outraged, apparently. Revolted, so was his wife. Later on that Monday morning, Fuller tells me that Matthews has moved hotels. Moved to the Hotel Rex, one of the cheapest in the city. He's been seen in various bars, and perhaps most surprising, he's taken to smoking cigarettes, the cheapest on the market.
Hey, barman, give me another drink.
Overnight, he changed. Within 24 hours, he seemed to be on the verge of a nervous breakdown. I decided to ring up a psychiatrist who often helped us out, for a professional opinion. To my surprise, the doctor told me that Matthews himself had made an appointment to see him that very afternoon.
Mr. Matthews?
Yes.
Haven't you got any luggage?
Well, I only want to ask the doctor a few questions.
Follow me, please.
Yes.
Mr. Matthews.
Welcome. Make yourself comfortable. Everything's a bit shabby here, supported by private endowment, you understand. Funds always rather tight. Sit down. Let's shed some light on the proceedings. Better.
You mind my smoking?
Not at all. But you used not to smoke.
Never.
Now, you were born on November the 13th, 1903, weren't you?
Yes.
Your address, still the Hotel Orban?
It's the Rex now.
Oh, the Rex now, but still living in hotel rooms, my dear Matthews.
Does that surprise you?
Look here, you've been living in Zurich for what, 13 years now. Other men establish families, have children, build for the future. Haven't you any private life at all? Excuse my bluntness.
Oh, I see. The commissioner's been in touch with you. You've been asked to examine me. The police don't think I'm entirely, normal. Is that right?
I see.
and 2 guards outside in case I make a fuss.
Listen to me, Matthews. I want to talk to you as a doctor.
Feel free.
Yes. Yes, I've been told that recently you've been doing certain things that couldn't be described as exactly normal. What could possibly have driven a man to throw up the chance of a posting like that in Jordan? And this obsession with finding a murderer who's already been found. The cigarettes. The drink. 4 double brandies after a bottle of wine is what I've heard. All these things, taken together, Matthews, look to my eyes like abrupt personality disintegration. Like the beginnings of a real illness. Yours is a hard profession, Matthews, none harder. My suggestion is that you stay here for a few days and we do some tests on you just to round out the clinical and psychological picture. Do you have occasional fevers?
Nope.
Speech defect?
Of course not.
Voices?
Oh, of course not.
Sudden perspiration. Allow me. You're agitated. Shall I call the nurse if you would go to your room now?
I have no such intention. Have you got any cognac?
I'll give you a sedative.
I don't need a sedative. I need cognac.
Bring a bottle of cognac and 2 glasses from my room. And make it snappy.
Yes, doctor.
Really, Matthews, it seems to me urgently necessary for you to sign in here. Otherwise, we'll wake up to a classic psychological and physical breakdown. We want to avoid that, don't we? With a little effort, we can. I'm busy. Dark. Shall I turn on the ceiling light?
No.
Good, good, good.
There you are, Doctor.
Let's cut out all this man-to-man and make it snappy rubbish. You're a doctor. Now, have you ever had a case you couldn't solve?
Most of my cases can't be solved.
Oh, of course. Silly me.
I didn't mean that. Did you come here only to ask me that?
Amongst other things.
For heaven's sake, what's the matter with you? You've always been one of the most rational men I've ever known.
I don't know. The murdered child.
Lily Dobell.
I can't stop thinking about that child.
It's preying on your mind.
Have you got any children?
Like you, I'm unmarried.
Oh, so? You too? You see, look. I looked straight at what lay in front of me. I didn't duck it, not like my successor, Halsey. Good old, normal Halsey. A mutilated corpse lay there in the leaves. Only the face was untouched. A child's face. I stared at it. And in the bushes there lay a red skirt and bits of pretzel. But that wasn't the real horror. You wondered why I'd lived in a hotel all my life. Well, you're right. I didn't want to face the world. I wanted to master it like an automaton, but not suffer with it. I wanted to be like a technician, control things, keep my head, stay indifferent. And that's how I could look at that body in the leaves, that child's body. But when I faced her parents, I couldn't stand it anymore. I just wanted to run away. So you know what I did? I gave them a promise. A promise that I couldn't keep because I was about to fly off to Jordan. But you see, I would have promised anything just to get away from their suffering. And then the old indifference came over me again. And I let it settle on me like a familiar jacket. That was the horror. I didn't fight for the peddler.
and let events take their course. Matt, the automat, they used to call me in the station. Superior, calm, formal, inhuman. Indifferent. And then I saw those children at the airport. And that's when I turned back. And, you know the rest.
And now?
I want to keep my promise. I want to find the man who murdered Lily DeBell.
You can go back to the ward. I won't be needing you any longer.
Good. This really matter.
How can I help you? I'm not a criminologist. Why are you set on believing it wasn't the peddler?
Look at this.
It was Lily DeBell's drawing in crayon. A drawing of a man, tall, taller than the fir trees which surrounded him, wearing a black hat, black clothes. From his right hand, a number of tiny circlets with many fine hairlines, like stars, falling from his hand towards the little girl. And at the top of the drawing in the sky, a black motor car, and beside it a queer animal with strange horns.
This drawing was done by Lily DeBell. I took it from the schoolroom.
Yes, I'd heard. What's it supposed to represent?
The hedgehog giant.
And how am I supposed to interpret that?
Lily said that a giant in the woods gave her little hedgehogs. And then she drew this scene.
And now you think...
The hedgehog giant may well have been the murderer. It is possible that Lily DeBell made a drawing of her murderer.
That's nonsense, Matthews. This drawing is a product of her imagination. Don't base any theories on it.
Probably it is. But what about the car? Now, that's been pretty well observed. It looks to me like an old American model. And the drawing of the giant has come from real life as well.
The giants are imaginary. Kindly spare me the folk tales.
A tall, heavily bodied man might easily look like a giant to a little girl.
You think the murderer was a big man?
Well, that's only a guess. But if my assumption is right, the murderer was driving around in an old black American car.
Why did you bring this to me?
Assuming that the only clue that I have got to the murderer lies in this drawing, I've got to follow it up. But I don't know how to read it. I need your help.
A drawing like this would tell you nothing about the murderer. All you can say from this drawing is something about the girl who made it. Lily must have been an intelligent, alert, happy child. Children don't only draw what they see, but also the feelings aroused in them by what they see. Fantasy and reality mingle. So, there are some real things in this drawing. The big man, the car, the girl. Then there are the things that seem to be in code. The hedgehogs, the animal with the big horns. Riddles. And the answer to those riddles Lily DeBell has taken away with her to the grave. And Matthews, I'm a doctor, not a medium. Put the drawing away. It's ridiculous to go on thinking about
it. You just haven't got the nerve, have you?
I hate wasting time.
You say you're a scientist, right? Then you know what a working hypothesis is. Now, just for now, let us assume that this drawing is of the murderer. Now, just fall in with my fiction for a while, and let's see what comes up.
What did the peddler look like?
Insignificant.
Intelligent?
Not stupid, but lazy-minded.
Wasn't he convicted of sexual assault?
On a 15-year-old.
Relations with other females?
Well, yes, he was a peddler. He was pretty notorious around the countryside.
Shame this Don Juan confessed and hanged himself. Otherwise, I wouldn't have put him down for a sex maniac at all. All right. Let's look at your hypothesis. The hedgehog giant in the drawing is quite conceivable as your sex murderer. He looks tall and massive. Men who commit such crimes against children are usually primitive, more or less feeble-minded, imbeciles or morons. Robust, inclined towards violence, impotent, and displaying inferiority feelings towards women. Was the girl actually raped?
No.
Was it the same with the other two
exactly
girls?
Exactly the same.
With a razor, too?
Yes.
Then it's not, properly speaking, a sex murder, but an act of revenge. The criminal's intention in committing these murders was to avenge himself on women, whoever he was.
But a little girl isn't a woman.
But to a sick man, a little girl can serve as a substitute for a woman. Because the murderer doesn't dare attack women, he attacks little girls. He kills them instead of the specific woman he has in mind. For that reason, he will always pursue the same type of girl.
And what is the reason for this revenge?
Possibly sexual conflicts. Perhaps the man was repressed or exploited by a woman. Perhaps his wife was rich and he was poor. Perhaps she held a higher social position than he did.
None of that would apply to the peddler.
Then some other factors will apply to him. The most unbelievable absurdities are possible between men and women.
Assuming, again, that the peddler is not the murderer, would there be a continuing danger of more murders?
When did the first murder take place?
5 years ago.
The next?
2 years ago.
That would suggest that his resistance to these impulses is growing increasingly feeble, and the chances are that he might commit murder again within months, even weeks, if the opportunity presented itself.
How would he behave in the interval?
To begin with, he would feel relief. But soon, new emotions of hatred would begin to accumulate. A new thirst for revenge. He'd start loitering around in the vicinity of children, in front of schools, perhaps, or in public squares. Perhaps he'd start driving around in his car, seeking a new victim. And then, when he'd found the girl, he'd strike up a friendship with her, as before. And then you'd have another murder.
Wish me luck in my search for the hedgehog giant.
So the giant's more to you than a working hypothesis, is he?
He is utterly real to me. I don't doubt for one moment that he exists.
Matthews, you're attempting the impossible. I don't want to be sentimental now. A man has his will, his ambition, his pride, and doesn't like to surrender them. I understand that. I'm the same myself. But if you're going in search of a murderer who in all probability doesn't exist, and whom you'll never find, even if he does exist, because there are too many like him who don't commit murder only by sheer chance, you're putting yourself in grave danger. It may be courageous of you to choose madness as a method. I'll happily salute your bravery. All that's something of a fashion nowadays. But if this method doesn't lead to its goal, I'm afraid that nothing but the madness will remain for you.
Goodbye, Dr. Locke. Thank you.
This conversation was reported back to me by Locke. Unfortunately, I could hardly read his spidery handwriting, so I got Halsey to look over it for me.
As he says, Chief, it's an untenable hypothesis.
I'm not so sure.
It's crazy.
Halsey, remember, we never got a detailed confession from the peddler. Nothing we could check.
He went and killed himself before we got the chance.
Well, we never found the murder weapon. None of the razors in his basket showed traces of blood.
Because he didn't use any of those razors to kill her with.
Look, I want the woods searched again. Every square inch.
Aye, aye, Chief.
They searched for days. But again, they found nothing.
The razor's probably lying at the bottom of the gorge.
Probably.
Either Matthews is crazy or we are. That's what we've got to decide now.
These photographs of the three girls.
What about them?
Oh, blonde, blue-eyed.
Well?
It supports the hedgehog giant idea.
Well, why should it? The girls simply fit the type the peddler went for. I wonder what Matthews is up to now. Sure wouldn't like to be inside his skin.
Don't underestimate him, Halsey. He's capable of anything.
Even finding a murderer who doesn't exist.
Perhaps. I know one thing. He won't give up. And I was right about that. A few days later, I got a phone call from another police chief, who finally brought the conversation round to Matthews. Apparently, day after day, he'd been seen hanging round the city zoo. And he'd also bought an old car. A little while after that, I was sitting having dinner in my favorite restaurant, eating soup and feeling at peace with the world, when a salesman from an oil company came lurching over to me and sat at my table.
Waiter, cognac.
Have you heard about your friend, your Inspector Matthews? He's taken over a petrol station in the Grison near Cour. We were about to close it down because it was losing us money.
I don't believe you.
It's true. As I sit here, it's true. And what's more, he's turned it round. Go and have a look someday. Lines of old crooks patiently queuing up to be served by Inspector Matthews. As what? It's got to be seen to be believed. Take a trip.
I couldn't say a word. The next day, I told Halsey the news.
Well, he really has gone out of his mind, hasn't he? I always said he would.
Why do you look so pleased, Halsey?
Pleased? I'm not pleased.
Halsey was smiling as he tucked into his donut. A few days later, I got a phone call from the directress of an orphanage. The old spinster told me in high excitement that Matthews had just paid her a visit.
He was solemnly dressed in black, Chief Inspector. He asked whether he might have a particular girl for adoption from amongst my protégés, as he called them. He pointed her out to me, the one that he wanted, and said that he'd always longed to have a child, and that now he was managing a garage, he was in the position of taking care of one. Naturally, I refused his request. The regulations would not have permitted a 50-year-old man to adopt a little girl. But he made such a strong impression on me, Chief Inspector, that I thought it my duty to tell you. Goodbye.
And with that, she hung up. Again, a few days later, more news about Matthews. News that set me reeling. Some pimp we'd been interrogating, he called himself a hairdresser, blurted out with relish that Matthews was living with a former prostitute, Laura Webb. I was stunned. Halsey, of course, was outraged. The federal councillor talked of public disgrace. I decided that the time had come to go out there and see for myself what was going on. It was a Sunday again. It seems to me, now that I look back on it, as if a number of the key events in this story took place on Sundays. Bells chiming everywhere, the whole country ringing and clanging. On the road, one car after another, on the radio, one sermon after another. Later on in the morning, the guns started banging, popping, rat-tapping, cracking at the fire ranges near every village. Everywhere, monstrous, senseless tumult. Matthew's petrol station, it didn't look run down in those days. Rather pleasant. Everything clean, geraniums in the windows. On the forecourt, toys everywhere, as well as a swing, a large doll's house set up on a bench, a doll's pram, a rocking horse, and Matthews, a little girl of 7 or 8, her arms around a doll. A girl with blonde plaits and a red skirt. The customer made off at speed. I walked over to Matthews. That was Red Major, wasn't it? How long's she been out there? 6 months?
Regular?
No, super. Matthews filled the tank and cleaned the windscreen.
14 francs 30.
Yeah. Keep the change. Oh, I'm sorry, Matthews. I just slipped out.
That's all right. I'm used to it.
Hello.
You're a pretty little thing. What's your name?
Mary.
Have a pleasant trip.
Look, I wanted to have a talk with you. For God's sake, what is all this about?
I promise not to bother you anymore with the case of Lily DeBell, Chief. Fair's fair. Don't bother me with it either.
Matthews, let's stop being childish. And can we go inside, please? This shooting's making me nervous. I never could stand rifle practice. He showed me into the house. The girl tagging along behind. In the hall, we met Laura Webb coming up from the cellar with potatoes. An attractive woman. Fine-looking. All in all, she made a good impression. She vanished into the kitchen. We made our way to the living room. So, the kid's hers?
Yes.
And where did you pick Laura up?
Near here. She was working in a factory.
And why is she here?
Well, I needed someone to keep house for me.
Matthews, I want to talk to you privately.
Mary, go into the kitchen.
Now, Matthews, what's all this about?
Very simple, Chief. I'm fishing.
What's that supposed to mean?
Detective work, Chief.
Look, I'm not a beginner, but I really don't understand.
Let me have one of those.
Yes, please, please.
I suppose, Locke sent you a memo, did he, on our chat?
Yes, couldn't make head nor tail of it.
You couldn't. I did. Drink?
Oh, yes, thank you, yeah. In what way did you...
The child's drawing represented the truth.
Did it? Then how did you interpret the hedgehog?
I don't know yet. But I've figured out the animal with the strange horns.
Well?
It's an ibex.
Is that why you went to the zoo?
I spent days there. I also got children to sketch ibexes for me. And all their drawings are like Lily DeBell's picture of the animal.
The emblem of this canton.
The emblem on the car's license plate caught Lily's attention, and so she drew the ibex.
Yes, we should have worked that out straight away.
Well, the mistake we made, you, Halsey, and I, was to assume that the murderer comes from Zurich. The truth is he comes from the Grisons. I trace back the scenes of the other crimes. Both of them lie on the route from the Grisons to Zurich.
Mm. You said you were fishing. What do you mean by that?
Have you ever been fishing?
Yes, once or twice.
Then you'll know that if you want to catch the big fish, there are two things you have to do. Find the right place, use the right bait. Then if the fish is a vegetarian, like a burbot say, you can catch it with cherry's bait. But if the fish is predatory, like trout, you can catch it with something live. An insect or a small fish.
Wait a minute.
Anybody who wants to get from the Grisons to Zurich must use this road, unless he wants to make a big detour through the Oberalp Pass.
And the little girl's your bait?
Her name's Mary.
You're going to wait here till the murderer passes by, sees Mary, and falls into the trap you've set for him?
The murderer must pass by here.
Well, all right, good, but... Look, let's assume then that you're right. Let's assume this murderer really exists. I mean, anything's possible in our profession. Don't you think the whole thing's a bit risky?
There's no other way. I don't know anything about this murderer. I can't hunt for him. So what can I do? Pick out his next victim. Use her as bait. And wait till he comes to me.
But you can't expect your bait to stay by the roadside all the time. I mean, she has to go to school, doesn't she?
The summer holidays start soon.
And you're going to keep her out there the whole time, are you? Come, Matthews, you're becoming obsessed. You can't just sit there waiting for something to happen that might never happen. And even if he does pass, he still might not want to take your bait, to use your phrase. And so you'll wait, and you'll wait.
An angler has to wait, too.
Does she know why you're here, Matthews? Does Laura know?
No. I only told her I wanted a housekeeper.
Matthews, how about coming back with us? Wouldn't you rather like that?
No.
I mean, we'd keep you on at headquarters work for now at your old pay.
I don't want to.
Well, it's worth thinking over, you know. If only from a purely financial point of view.
As proprietor of a petrol station, I'm making more than I did when I worked for the government. Look, there's another customer. Laura should be getting on with the dinner.
He got up and went out. Then another customer drove up. By the time Matthews had finished with him, I'd got into my car. Matthews, there really is no helping you.
That's how it is.
And so, he waited. Waited obstinately, inflexibly, passionately. He did his work, served his customers, and waited. Through the long, hot summer, sitting on the forecourt, drinking cognac, talking to the girl.
Lovely dress, you.
She would stay at his side or play with her doll's house when she came back from school.
Oh, cute.
Laura worked in a small factory near the village and came home in the evenings, her string shopping bag full of bread. And that night, there were often footsteps around the house and low whistles, but she never opened the door. And Matthews waited. Day after day, he waited.
Once upon a time.
The summer holidays came. He played with the girl, told her fairy tales, went through all of Grimm, Hans Andersen, the Arabian Nights, invented stories of his own, anything to keep her by his side, in sight of the road. The drivers looked at the two with astonishment, touched by this idyll of father and child. They gave her chocolate and chatted to her. Matthews watched them tensely. And then, after a few weeks, he decided to let her wander where she liked. Secretly, he followed her to the village through the woods behind the station, leaving a queue of drivers grumpily blowing their horns. And so, through the summer holidays, he waited. The holidays ended. The girl went back to school. Matthews continued to wait. Lost, tormented, hopeless, yet full of hope. Then one day, sitting there, unshaven, dull, grease-smeared, he suddenly realized that Mary wasn't back from school, so he turned towards the woods, wide awake now. Pushing his way through the briars and undergrowth, branches lashing back into his face, he came to a clearing. He'd never known it was there. From the other side of the clearing, a broad path cut through the woods, used by the villagers to bring their junk. All around lay tin cans, rusty wire, pushchairs, similar rubbish. A huge collection of junk. And trickling through the center of the clearing was a small stream. And sitting on the bank of the small, silvery stream, her doll and school bag beside her, Mary.
He'll pay Master Penny a day because he can't work anymore.
Mary, what are you doing here?
Waiting.
Who for?
The wizard.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's full of bloody wizards. Come on, let's go.
Taking the child's hand, he walked back through the woods with her, sat down on his bench again, and waited. Smoked, stared, stubborn, inflexible, conjuring his enemy to appear.
Come, 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 come.
Motionless, he sat in the white moonlight, fell asleep, woke up stiff and frozen at dawn, crawled into bed. The next day, Mary came home from school earlier than usual. Later, Laura came back from work at the factory.
Where's Mary?
Inside.
Has she been all right today?
She was at school.
What? She's had the day off, teacher's conference or something.
Really?
So where's she been?
The next afternoon, Matthews drove down to the school and watched the children coming out after school time. No Mary. Her teacher came out, looked at him very sternly.
She's been here neither today nor the day before yesterday, and both times she's failed to bring an excuse. Is she ill?
Yes, I'm sorry. I should have told you. I'm so sorry.
He drove like a madman to the woods, stormed through the undergrowth to the clearing, and found nothing. Exhausted, breathing heavily, scratched and bleeding from the thorns, he returned to his car and drove back to the petrol station. But before he reached it, he saw the girl skipping along the road. He stopped.
Get in, Mary. There we are. What's that on your hand?
Just chocolate.
Who gave that to you?
A girl.
At school?
Yes.
At the petrol station, Mary sat down on a bench and started putting something into her mouth and chewing it.
Can I see? Just open your hand there. There we are.
In her palm lay a prickly ball of chocolate, half bitten off. Truffles.
Have you got any more of these?
No.
Well, let's have a look. What's this in your pocket? Hanky. Two more. Mary, Did the wizard give you these? Did the wizard say that you mustn't tell anybody about the two of you? You don't have to keep it a secret. He's a nice wizard. You go along and see him tomorrow.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
There.
What are you giving me these for?
The hedgehogs.
What do you mean?
It's very simple. The murderer gave Lily Dobell truffles, little prickly balls of chocolate, and she interpreted them as hedgehogs. That is the solution of the child's drawing.
How do you expect to prove that?
Because the same thing has happened to Mary.
My God.
Somehow, I don't know when he met her.
And he told me what had happened. I was instantly convinced. I sent for Halsey and four policemen, gave them my instructions, and informed Burkhardt, the examining magistrate. Then we set out. We searched the clearing but found nothing. We scattered and hid ourselves. The day was a good one, Thursday. Mary had no school in the afternoon. At 2 o'clock, we heard the bells of the village, and then the girl appeared. She ran to the little stream with her doll, sat down, and looked towards the woods. Her eyes shone. She was tense, attentive, obviously waiting for someone, but couldn't see us. We were well hidden behind trees and shrubs.
I think you'll come in half an hour.
Yes. We waited. Nothing existed for us any longer but this autumn wood and the little girl in the red skirt in the clearing. Spellbound, we waited. Waited for the murderer, resolute, craving justice, settlement, punishment. 2 hours had passed. We waited. And waited like Matthews had for weeks and months. 5 o'clock came. The first shadows fell. Then twilight. Everything paled, all the glowing colors faded. And the girl skipped away. Not one of us said a word. Not even Halsey. Then.
We'll come back tomorrow. We'll spend the night in Coeur. Yeah.
And so we waited there on Friday. And Saturday as well. Burkhardt didn't like it one bit, but I remained firm, refused to leave. We waited. And waited. Not for the child anymore, not even for the murderer. We waited in that clearing for Matthews. He had to win his point. He had to be confirmed. Sunday. The wood was full of hikers. And later a couple wandered into the clearing and began to make love right in front of the girl. And throughout it all, she just sat there with incomprehensible patience, in incredible anticipation. 4 afternoons she'd sat there. Only 4 of us left now, me, Halsey, Fuller, and Matthews. Monday we waited. Halsey went back to Zurich. Tuesday. Wednesday. I began to despise the child, to hate her. Thursday. Soon I was going to have to make up my mind. Well, there she was in her red dress carrying her doll. Then Burkhardt, the examining magistrate, appeared, him and Halsey. Burkhardt came over to me and stared at the child, flushed with anger. The child, singing that song. I couldn't stand it. I couldn't bear to look at the girl, that ugly gap-toothed mouth, those skimpy plaits, that nondescript red dress. She now seemed to me repulsive, vulgar, common, stupid. I could have strangled her, killed her, torn her to pieces just to stop hearing that idiotic song. It was maddening. Everything was the same, unbearable, moronic, senseless, stupid. And then, suddenly, Burkhardt stalked forward, broke through the undergrowth, and went straight up to the child.
Who are you waiting for? Who are you waiting for? Answer me, do you hear, you stupid brat? Who are you waiting for?
Mrs. Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Tell the commissioner what you have to tell him. At 11 o'clock, we have to proceed with extreme unction.
Mary! A few weeks ago, someone gave you chocolate. Now you remember, chocolate's like little hedgehogs. Now did a man in black clothes give you those chocolates?
Arthur was 23 when we married. I was 55. He was an orphan. A simple man, never very good at reading and writing.
Listen, Mary, now you must tell us who gave you those chocolates. You must tell us exactly what the man looked like. I once knew a girl who also wore a red skirt just like yours, who was given chocolates by a big man in black clothes, the same kind of prickly little balls that you ate. And then the girl went into the woods with the big man, and the big man killed the girl with a knife.
After midnight, before he came home, I heard him fussing and washing for a long time in the bathroom. And I went in and saw that there was blood all over Arthur. Over his clothes, too.
Mary, you must tell me! I only want to see that nothing happens to you!
You're lying, you're lying, you're lying!
I said, Arthur, dear, you killed that girl, didn't you?
You stupid brat! Tell us what you know this minute!
Tell us, you stupid!
Tell us! You stupid bitch!
You bloody bitch!
Get away! Get away from me!
Oh, my God.
Mary!
Laura, I've discovered that Mary has been given chocolate by an unknown person. I have sound reasons for suspecting that it is the same person who lured a child into a forest some time ago and killed her.
Caught on to it at once because of the truffles missing from the sweet dish. She had a red skirt and yellow plaits, too. It's unbelievable how dangerously mothers will dress their daughters.
Was the girl Lily Dobell?
Her name was Lily. And the others were Sarah and Evelyn.
Inspector Matthews, did you take in Mary and me solely in order to find this person?
There was no other way, Laura.
You bastard. Mary, come on.
Mr. Burkhardt, all we can do now is to go on waiting. Now, if you could just let me have another six men with radios, that would suffice.
Hardy, Fuller, come with me. Now listen to me. The operation's failed. Now, we've got to admit that we've waited more than a week and no one's come.
The child was waiting for him.
I said to him very sternly, Arthur, I cannot permit it. Where is the girl? Not far from here, he said, at a petrol station.
Matthews, the child came here to be alone, to sit by the stream, dream with her doll and sing. That's all. We read a story into this.
Mary was given the hedgehog.
Mary was given chocolate by someone. Anyone can give a child chocolate. Look, you say they're hedgehogs. I mean, that's only your interpretation. There's no proof. There are going to be no clues here, Matthew.
It's a place for murder. You can feel it.
Then I became really firm. It won't do, Arthur, I said. You've promised me. Clean the chicken coop at once and give the hens a decent feeding. And Arthur flew into a rage. He actually screamed at me, I'm only your servant. That was how ill the poor fellow was. And he ran out with the truffles and the razor and jumped into the Buick.
This is the place. I'm going to go on waiting.
It's total rubbish.
He'll come here.
It's rubbish. It's stupid. It's crap.
It's a pity Laura and Mary know the story now, but we'll manage.
I'm going now, Matthews.
I'll wait some of the time here and up at the station some of the time. Yes, 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 that's the answer.
Goodbye, Matthews.
He'll come. He'll come. He'll come. He'll come.
15 minutes later, they telephoned me. Poor Arthur had had a collision with a van and was dead. Father Tillman here came, and Sergeant Buller. He was wonderfully tactful. And that is why, Commissioner Tanner, I've remembered the police of Coeur in my will.
That was 5 or 6 years later. I thought the news could save him. I drove like mad to the service station. Inside the local tavern, a crowd were having a roaring time. It was cold, close to Christmas. But Matthews was sitting on the bench outside, smoking a cheroot and stinking of absinthe. I sat down beside him and told him the story. But it was too late. He didn't even seem to hear me. Didn't even seem to hear me.
I'll wait. I'll wait. He'll come. He'll come. I'll wait. I'll wait. He'll come. He'll come.
In The Pledge, Matthews was played by Keith Drinkle, Tanner by Tom Georgeson, Horton by Jonathan Adams, and Halsey by Matthew Morgan. Burkhart was played by Terence Edmund, Mary by Nadine Ballantyne, Mrs. Scott by Gudrun Ure, and Locke by Jonathan Taffler. Other parts were played by Jill Graham, David Holt, Cyril Jenkins, James Telfer, Philip Anthony, John Webb, and Alexander Thompson. The hymn practice was recorded at the Roach School, Wandsworth. The Pledge was adapted by Peter Thompson from the novel by Friedrich Dürrenmatt. The director was Claire Grove.